I remember being a teenager and being told that rosé was like training wheels for wine, because I'm pretty sure that the very first thing I ever drank was like a Californian Zinfandel. That like I'd probably like before I moved on to the Jackson Triggs Chardonnay. Horror, that was the year of like 2001 or something.
So there was no non-vintage Cuvée Buffet rosé?
No, remarkably. I don't think, yeah, they must have had a bottle on the list, but no. No, I was drinking shitloads of Zinfandel.
I love rosé.
I do too. Especially in the summer, easy drinking, sit on the barbecue. Well, not sit on the barbecue, sit near the barbecue.
It's funny though, isn't it? Because it really is. I still find it surprising that it's such a seasonal drink. I love pink wine all year round.
Me too.
The winemaker that I know that said he wanted to get a t-shirt made saying, only real men drink pink wine. I thought that was brilliant.
Like quiche and pink wine.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I think in every different city or market, everybody has a different idea of or a different view on rosé, right?
What like rosé is to them.
Yeah, like for example, in Berlin, it's like rosé is not a huge thing.
No,
but like
really.
In London, everybody, all the clients that I deal with, oh, we need to get an extra rosé on. It's spring now, you know,
because
the demand will be
there. Totally.
And then as soon as the weather changes, they start to take it off.
I think also because it's strange because when we talked in the past about like what we should be trying, when I think about what the average person thinks about rosé, they think that rosés are like a bit of residual sugar, that they're a bit sweeter, that they're like easy. I think people forget that there are complex, interesting rosés that have depth, that have some balls to them that you can really enjoy, that aren't just this throwaway thing. And I don't know whether it's just the color that throws people off, that people are like, ooh, rosé, that it's maybe not that serious, but I think it can be fun, but it can also be serious.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think actually it started to change. The last few years it has started to change where, you know, like before it was, whenever I did a wine training, I was like, sounds really bad what I'm about to say. But when we tried rosés with like some of the restaurants I work with, I'd say, you know, we're going to try these. We're going to talk about the producer. We're going to talk about the wine. But what you'll probably find is that when people come in the restaurant, they'll have two questions and this is all they're going to want to know. Is it pale? Is it dry? Yeah. And I think, you know, and rosé was kind of like a, it's bizarre because when you look at white wine, you look at red wine, rosé wine is kind of like, it's its own little checkbox. I've got a rosé on the list.
Yeah.
Done. Doop. That's enough.
Right.
And I think
base is covered.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if you look at it, like most rosé that you can buy in a supermarket or from your local corner shop or whatever, they all sort of fit a similar profile. So there's not that much difference between them.
Although I wonder whether that's like having grown up in North America. I don't know. I feel like Europeans drink maybe drier rosés. Mm. And I feel like North America, like when I think about rosés, was really like the sweeter Californian, like Zinfandel. That was pretty sweet.
That's interesting. Yeah.
So I wonder whether like, I mean, North American markets generally, I think like things with a bit more sugar in them anyway. Could be wrong. But I feel like that's my memory as a teenager of like the first rosés I drank.
Well, it's interesting. So I just came back, obviously, from working on the list for the newly opened Chateau Mate in Miami, which is in South Beach. And I did a bit of research on like Miami as a market.
Right.
Talked to different importers, different sommeliers that were there. Learned a little bit about what was imported, what sold well. Looked at like dozens of wine lists for restaurants, like all in preparation before going there. And then obviously when you're there, eating and drinking around, and
you kind of get a sense of like what people are.
Yeah, like you want to understand what people want and what's happening and what can you do that's going to be interesting that maybe someone else isn't doing yet or what's missing. And I was quite amazed how big rosé is in North Miami. I guess because
it's
like
summer, perpetual summer kind of an area.
Yeah. But I was amazed that it was like, you know, we have like maybe 8 rosé on the list.
Yeah.
And that's quite a small list for like Miami, by Miami standards. Like people want them in bottles, magnums, double magnums, and they don't care how much it is. The more expensive, the better. And they like the selection. And I was quite impressed because really when you look at a lot of lists,
because I feel
in
like
London,
usually it's like,
two.
Yeah. It's like really underrepresented. And then it's like really depends on the taste of that particular som that's put the wine list together. It's going to be like 2 that are kind of the same. Or they're nondescript, or they're like, they're just sort of there to please an audience.
And I think also that's, a lot of that is like, it's not completely down to consumers. I think that's also to do with people that are selecting the wine.
Well, that's what I mean. It's like the taste of not the customer, it's the taste of whoever's made the list. They're like, okay, I have to have a pink wine. this is what I can handle, or this is what, whatever. It's sometimes like the throwaway section, which is too bad, because I think there's lots of fun stuff.
Drink pink year round.
Yeah.
I think you should drink pink. Yeah, I think first wine that we're starting with as well is like, this is so delicious. When would you not want to drink it?
I mean, it's going down really, it's yummy. I had a bottle last week too. I'm like,
yeah. I love this.
Oh,
and
I
this
do
is
too.
Like completely dry as well. But so the wine that we've got is,
how do you pronounce it?
Radice.
Radice.
Yeah, from Paltrinieri. And
delicious.
It's a Lambrusco. But it's made with, there's lots of different types of Lambrusco grapes. This is Lambrusco di Sorbara, which is apparently has a thinner skin and is paler, which is why it comes out like a rosé colour, and it's made more in the sort of style of a white wine. So like very minimal sort of skin contact, but like completely bone dry. This is also Pet Nat method,
yeah, okay,
as well, so it finishes the fermentation in the bottle. But
so easy to drink. Definitely smashed back a couple of these a few weeks ago at a barbecue.
If you ever were to drink in the morning... Not saying that I do,
but some of us have.
This would be perfect.
Oh, it's great brunch wine. Yeah, it's not too much of anything.
11.5% alcohol. Yeah. It's light. It's refreshing. There's some nice fruit. It's got that sort of like candied sweet and sour fruit going on.
Or a little bit,
but really, really super fresh and alive, and slightly cloudy because obviously it's Pet Nat, and it's a bit like it's unfiltered, but. Yeah, I really like it. There's this wine, and then there's another Lambrusco from Quarticello, which is a rosé as well, that is actually on the list at the Michelberg by the glass. And I just, from the pop-up we did, we had the Lambrusco as well.
And
I
and
just
that think it's sold, like people were just loving
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's like a style of wine that I think people absolutely love, this light, fresh,
but I think
pink,
also
juicy.
Sometimes I always think like Lambrusco that's going to be like super sweet, and it's not always. Like this one's like stewed rhubarbs and strawberries, you know, it's like that.
Well, and it's pink, it's not red wine either.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's got that, like, it's everything that you love about spring. Like, it feels like it's sweet, even though it's dry, you know? Like, there's that...
Yeah, it's got fruit.
Yeah.
Like, fruit flavors just, like, and sweet flavors. Yeah. I like it, that sort of sweet and sour.
Yeah.
I took this too. Yeah, and I think it's a nice entry wine for people that want to try something, you know, a little bit more in the natural direction.
But I think it's also not that expensive. If I remember rightly, this one's also like 50... Like, I feel like when I bought it, was it maybe between 15 and 20 euros?
Okay.
I can't remember exactly, but I feel like it was the last big batch of ordering I did for home. I tried to spend under 20, so it would have been.
Did you buy it?
Around.
You bought it through Viniculture.
Yeah,
yeah. I think that sounds about right.
Yeah, because I feel like I bought a couple of things at 27, but I feel that was like something different.
No, good price point and like a lot of fun, and I think it's like uncomplicated that most people can get their head around it. You don't have to be like a natural wine nut to appreciate it, but I think equally Somme's wine people love it as well, so it's like
because I think you could give this to someone that's like never had natural wine and they wouldn't necessarily go like, ooh, this is what's up with this wine. I think they would just be like, yum, that's delicious, give me more. Very drinkable. Actually, everything that we've got is pretty affordable today. How much is this one?
That's more expensive.
So that's the splurge today. Everything else is quite reasonable.
Yeah, these are amazing. It'll be interesting to see how that tastes. I hope it's still good. It's been Coravined. We will find out.
We'll find out. Da, da, da. That's the cliffhanger. I'm going to be like sad.
Be good. Yeah.
I'm going to be sad to move on from this one because I've been quite enjoying
it. Should I get us an extra couple of glasses so you can keep it?
Right. I want to keep it.
There you are. Just give it a sniff. So we've got two Provence rosés next, and then we've got the Quai Francoche rosé, which looks like it's... I don't know if we should do that before the Provence
rosés. Yeah, I actually kind of think that you should. I feel
have
like
you tasted
it's,
this
I've
before?
Had this before. I feel like I've had it before, and I feel like it's not... As maybe...
Let's just try it then. Let's do
I
that.
I think, because this is also probably the cheapest one we have today. I think this one retails for about maybe 10 to 12 euros. It's a super...
Paul, I feel like I'm ready. I'm
so
in your hands, Gwen.
Someone brought this. It says twist off. Someone brought this to me, actually.
I've got my corkscrew for you.
I feel like someone actually brought this to my house, but I really like Hummel wines, so...
Is it pale? No, it's
not. No, it's not. It's a really nice colour, actually.
Is it dry? I hope so.
We'll find out. It's been a while since I've had this one, so I don't know. But I really like the colour.
I've never tasted this, actually. I didn't know that they made
a rosé. It's so creamy. It's like cream soda.
It does smell like cream soda. You're right.
Well, it smells amazing. But like in a super candy way. But I love the colour because it's got this sort of like magenta tint. Like it's not rosé on the orangey-red scale. It's definitely like got a bit of like a lot of pink
almost
to
like,
it.
Yeah, pinky purple.
Lots of pink.
I don't know that that's fully dry.
No, I don't think it is. I feel like it could be a bit colder, but
I think it's okay to taste it at this temperature because at least you
can
actually flavor.
Taste it. Yeah, but if I were going to smash it on the balcony, I'd probably want it a bit colder.
So, where are hummel in Hungary? Like, what was the name of the region?
So I wrote this down. Well, it is. It says on the label.
This is Villani, it, isn't it?
Yeah, Villani. I was trying to Google Translate the pronunciation yesterday, but
any Hungarians out there, let us know.
So I do feel like it said it was at the most southern parts, the warmest. There we go. Yeah, it's the warmest, southernmost tip of Hungary. And it's more famous for its opulent red wines.
Okay.
340 miles from the sea, sub-Mediterranean climate. It is, I think the other grapes that are popular in this area would be, this is not the most popular, I think, from this region, but it's becoming. Seems to say that they focus more on Bordeaux varieties. But this one, I was doing my little reading yesterday.
It says 1.5 grams of residual sugar as well. So I guess it's not that. I thought there would be a bit more, but just sooner. I checked.
It's like, okay.
I had to check.
You had to check to know for sure. But I didn't realize that this was Blaufränkisch.
Yeah, Kekfrankosch is the Hungarian word for
Blaufränkisch. I didn't know that until yesterday.
Yeah.
Which has other names, but Lemberger. Lemberger?
Yes. Lemberger, yeah.
Yeah.
I had a delicious Lemberger on the weekend, actually.
Known as the Pinot Noir of the East.
I guess Blaufränkisch does have a similarity to Pinot. I find Blaufränkisch, though, a bit more ballsy than Pinot. Like, there's more structure there. And, like, this sort of sappier quality to it. More herbaceous. A little bit more, like this tree sap. Earthy sort of quality that I get from Kekfrankosch or Blaufränkisch.
For a long time, they thought it was a relative of Gamay. Because actually, when you do a Google Translate from Hungarian into English, it translates to Gamay. So I was a bit like, what? So when I was reading...
Really?
Yeah, apparently until they had DNA abilities, they were convinced that it was part of the Gamay family.
I should get my wine grapes book.
But it's not. I guess they've like since discovered that it's... Originally from, Blaufränkisch, so like the blue grape from the Frankish region, which would have been like the original German territory, the Frankish, the Germans. But what do you think? I mean, it's probably not my like absolute favorite rosé, but I think it'd be pretty straightforward with something to eat.
I'm honestly not a huge fan of it. I'm quite shocked.
Yeah, I really
it's
love cloying, the smell.
It's a bit flabby, and it's just lacking a little bit of like backbone.
Yeah. It's funny because it's got like a creamy, I really loved the smell, that sort of like creamy, but then it doesn't,
I don't find it interesting flavor-wise on the
palate. It's a bit like, boop, there it is.
I feel like it's a date with somebody I just don't want to be with on this date.
Like you could probably push through. You could push through,
a decent conversation and you're just like, every time there's an answer, it's like, that's not the answer.
I feel like it's not the worst, like I could push through and drink it all, but it would be like, just to get it done.
I'm not going to try and find like any metaphors for that.
No, that's all right.
It's okay.
Yeah, it's quite funny. I actually had a hard time finding much about this particular wine because it looks like they've scrapped this particular... When I was looking at the website, there's like no description.
No, I just checked on the website as well and it just says like 100% Kekfrankosch.
That's it.
And then it's like lots of strawberries and
no, but that's the other one. This particular one, the bumblebee one. Maybe they were like, we don't really love it. Yeah. We realize we don't love it because I generally like hummel wine, so.
I know you do, Gwen.
I know. I'm always drinking that bloody Gewürztraminer that everyone makes in front of me.
Anybody who drinks so much Gewürztraminer.
Entering my Gewürztraminer years.
That's not yet.
Not yet. 20 more years.
Yeah.
I'm just training.
I need at least another 60 years before I get there.
Oh, I love it so much.
I have to be honest, it's blah.
It's just like, it's like
you know
cherry.
What I mean? Like,
it's a bit like cherry cream soda.
I keep thinking, where can I tip it?
That's bad, awful, isn't it? I know,
I'm sorry, Hummel, but this is a fail. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just think, well, I guess I don't mean it in a positive way.
You're like, but, don't mean it in a terrible way. I just don't like it.
Yeah, no, but I think we need to be honest, don't we?
Absolutely.
Because I love those wines. Like,
yeah, me too.
We've shared a few together,
we have.
The Harsh Level.
Oh, I love that one.
So delicious.
So good.
But this is just...
I mean, there must be, like, someone that would...
I was so excited for this, but it's just...
I know.
It's not complex. I mean, it's cheap, so, like, let's not give it too much of a hard time. But it's not complex, and it's just boring. Mm.
So if you love a boring...
I think we're just too spoiled now, Gwen.
Maybe. Because I actually can see someone that's, like, maybe not a huge wine drinker quite enjoying this, because it's pretty easy, straightforward, the acidity's not too high, there's a bit of fruit. So I can see someone that's maybe, like, not looking for complex, maybe... enjoying this. Because that's the thing, like, maybe that's it. We're also looking for something. We have greater expectations. And maybe for someone that's, like, not looking for something too difficult, this is probably quite easy to drink. The acidity is not screaming high. It's not like...
I think that's what I don't like about it, for me.
There's not enough acidity. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's so inoffensive and bland. Yes. It's boring.
I think, because I actually don't mind the actual flavors. I do think if the acidity was higher, it probably would make it a slightly bit more interesting.
Just lacking energy.
Yeah.
It's like... Lacking energy and personality.
Yeah, it's all right.
It's a little couch potato that doesn't say anything. I feel
her. I feel her. Oh my God, you're like...
I'm really cussing it, aren't I? I don't know why.
Speaking to me. It's just that, like, the couch potato. That's me. That's me in a bottle.
You're not a couch potato.
Me.
Are you going to use your water glass? Can I tip my...
No, let's do it. Goodbye.
Adios.
Let's mind the equipment.
So this is also your vino.
So I'm going to be honest.
I'm really honest to open it. I hope that's okay.
I didn't curate this. This was like literally just what I had in my fridge. Which I actually quite like the idea that it wasn't too thought out. It was like, oh shit, we need two rosés. And I just grabbed what was in the fridge.
Yeah. That's good. What it's about.
And exactly.
So this is from Chateau du Roquefort. Côte de Provence Rosé Corail. Corail?
Corail.
Yeah. Corail. 2017.
Yeah. So this retails for under 20 euros. Thank you. And this one, if I remember rightly, is a classic Provençal mix.
Yeah, it says Syrah, Grenache, Carignan, Sanso, Claret.
Yeah. So yeah, clay limestone soils. So let's have a whiff.
Yeah.
I like the colour of this one too. It's well, that's...
Well, it's interesting, this producer, actually. There was a wine that I worked with that they made one year. The French word for hail, is it grey?
Grey, yeah, grey.
Yeah, so the wine was called that. And basically, their vineyards got so heavily hit by hail that all of their, like, neighbours and other winemakers and wineries...
pitched together,
gave them some grapes.
Oh, amazing.
So they put all of the different producers' names on the front of the label, and it was just a one-off thing.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, because, you know, they obviously wanted them to, like,
still produce
to have
something,
some revenue. Yeah,
that's really nice.
Yeah, I thought that was such a cool idea and, like, a really nice story of people sort of teaming up together. But I haven't tasted the wine since, actually.
Ooh. So I've had this one before, but it's been a while. Definitely.
So I guess, you know,
a bit more lively.
It's pale,
than the last
but
one.
Actually, it's got a good color. Actually,
yeah, it's a nice color. Yeah. It's slightly more on the orangey, it's like a neon-y, salmon-y colour, yeah.
Nice intensity on the nose, yeah, definitely, intensity, like, these like floral fruit, like that lovely like herbal character on the nose as well.
Still like, it makes me thirsty. It's got like a salinity to the smell that makes me want to drink it. Well, it's definitely higher acidity than the last one.
This is nice. It's dry, it's fresh, it's got nice fruit to it. I think, you know, like, look, it's not going to, like, if you're a wine drinker that loves extreme styles of wine,
but this ain't
natty wine, like, this ain't the wine for you. But for people who want, like, a clean, well-made...
It's like strawberry, like,
textured,
yummy. Yeah.
It's delicious, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really just like strawberries and cream with...
This is the checkbox rosé for people's wine list. Like, this style where it's dry, it's the right colour, it's got the right amount of fruit, it's got this lovely silky texture to it. The aromatics are there, but it's not too overblown. It's a nice integrity to that rosé. It's not trying to do anything
just
out
forward.
Of the box.
Yeah,
it's like, it's just a well-made example of Côte de Provence rosé.
Yeah, super yum. Mm. I would definitely save you for later.
Did you say that to me or for the wine?
Man, to the
I would
wine.
Definitely save you for later.
Save you for later.
I've got half pack of Rolos. You know, like, what would you do?
With the last Rolo.
I had one the other day, though, and I was like, I remember them being so much better as a kid.
The chocolate is so terrible. I know, it's like, it turns white within, like, minutes of having it.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, speaking of chocolate bars, though, I did have, yesterday I brought home you ever eat the Crunch chocolate bars?
No.
Oh, my God, with the rice puffs in it. In Copenhagen, I bought a white one.
I know the ones with the stripes. Is
it's like
red,
a blue, So they had a white one in Copenhagen. I brought that home. Oh my God. I ate it so slow that I can't believe Lucas, like my boyfriend, didn't even get a chance to like have a bite. I was eating blackberries.
He was
and eating
watching,
the white
he was like, watching you and he was like, that's disgusting.
And then at the end he was like, oh, you didn't save me some. It's like, that was the most delicious chocolate bar I've had in ages. blackberries, white chocolate.
But babe, such a good I forgot time. You were in the room.
I was like, you have to ask if you want some. I bought my own chocolate bar. Figure your own shit out.
I can kind of imagine him just watching you like a little bit of drool coming like, down, and he's like, is she going to give me some of the chocolate bar? Is she going to give me some of the chocolate bar? The dog sitting there too, looking at you. Is she going to give me some of the chocolate bar? And you're just, no.
I think one of my favorite things to do when you go out of town is like raid the snack section at the supermarket.
Yeah, or 7-Elevens. Yeah, Japan is the best place. 7-Eleven shopping in the night.
I love licorice. I went crazy in Denmark. I was just like, oh my God, today my coworker, business partner was saying, she's like, oh, I love those tiny saxophones they sell. And I was like, I think they're pipes. But I loved the idea.
She thought they were saxophones.
But I love it. It's like the sweetest thing. I was like, I'm never going to look at them the same way again. It's like tiny saxophones. It's way better than a pipe. Much more fun than pretending
was
to
smoke
a pipe. Yeah, it's so good. The tiny saxophone.
Oh, man.
So we're continuing to drink with this one, so that's a good sign. But I'm very excited about the next one.
When we were talking about doing, like, trying these rosés and what rosés, well, we kind of, it was kind of a bit of a last minute thing how we put together the selections. It's a bit random, but we were also talking about frosé.
Yes.
So you designed pins for Frosé Fest.
I'm really sad I'm missing it. I'll be in Paris.
Yeah, I mean, it will have already happened
by the time this comes out. Yeah. So you went to Miami. Let's just explain first why and how. So Emily went to Miami, and Americans love this thing called Frosé. And I've been out of North America for so long that it wasn't a thing. And now...
But apparently it's been going on for a long time. I was in London.
I guess it never hit Canada. I don't know.
Yeah, so I was in London recently, and I was talking with this man called Tor, mm-hmm. and he... has some like wine rooms. He has a couple of different wine bars that are called wine rooms, and I caught up with him and his business partner, and I was telling them about, like, they said, what other events are you doing?
Yeah,
because they came to Unfiltered in Berlin in May.
And so on a side note, we did an event in May during Raw, and it was very fun, and
they were there, and I caught up with them for a drink, and I said to them, they said, what are you doing next? And I said, oh, we've got Frosé Fest coming up. And they were like, oh, and I was like, you've had Frosé, right? And they said, yes, they've been serving.
I'm still a Frosé virgin.
Yeah, but they've been serving Frosé for years and
really?
Years. Yeah, he said they've been doing it for such a long time. So they're probably one of the only places in London that are doing Frosé.
So what is that? Break this down. So when I was like, when I think about it, is it like wine, strawberry daiquiri and vodka? Or something.
Well, kind of. Everybody's got a different recipe for frosé, but basically, I mean, as it's quite easy to work out from the name, frozen rosé. Frosé.
Yeah.
And I sort of first heard about frosé for a friend because it sort of took off in Melbourne, like maybe 2 years ago or 3 years ago. So people were like, and they were doing it with like some of the natural wine guys, like Patrick Sullivan. Like you saw pictures of people like opening the bottles, like pouring them into these like slushy machines and making slushy out of it.
Yeah.
And I was, at the time, I was a little bit like, I think I sort of snobbed it off. I was like, that sounds way too hipster and ridiculous. And then actually I was in Miami again, like, so I was working on the list for Chotto Mate and I went out with, this woman called Laura De Pasquale. She's an MS.
Yeah.
Super, super, you'd love her actually. She's super sassy, super intelligent, like an absolute gun. And anyway, I had a tasting with her. Well, actually I tasted this rosé that we're about to taste next with her. And we just got chatting and she said, come on, we'll go out for dinner next week. Let's meet. And so I met her for dinner, and I mentioned to her that like, I really want to try frosé because everybody's doing frosé. In every restaurant in Miami, it's like a thing. And she said, okay, what we'll do is we'll wind up the sommelier saying that, like, you love frosé. You
only
want to drink frosé. You're this amazing sommelier, but you just love frosé. And I was like, yeah, I'm up for it. So I get there.
Oh, my God.
And she's so sweet that we went to, like, Buludsud, and there's a sommelier there called Hannah. And I sat down, and she came out with a frosé for me.
Oh,
I didn't even have to order it. It's just super sweet. And it was so delicious. And her recipe was, or the recipe that they were using at the restaurant was, so it's like a frozen daiquiri, like in the same way that it's a slushy, essentially.
Yeah, exactly.
So an icy drink. And they were using, I can't remember what, I think they were using a ridiculous rosé, like Tompier or something stupid, like a really high quality.
Super over the top, yeah.
Yeah, so they were using like a really high quality rosé, I believe, and they were mixing it with two different types of vermouth. So that was the sweetening element. And that was very, very good. But I know that some people mix in like sugar syrup or liqueurs, like triple sec or even spirits. But yeah, we won't be doing that for Frosé Fest. We're doing...
You're like, keep these Berliners, like, keep them calm. Yeah. You don't want to like get them all roiled up.
So we're going to do, we're going to do like, basically frozen, a similar thing. So it's rosé with vermouth.
Yeah, yum.
So like
really
wine-based
nice
products.
Yeah,
yeah,
yummy.
And so you've designed the t-shirts for that, which is going to be amazing.
They're Miami Vice.
Yeah, they're like Miami Vice.
I love that every time someone sees it, they go, wow, Miami Vice.
Yeah, so we're going to serve frozen rosé, and Alan's going to cook, like, he's going to grill food in the courtyard, and it's going to be completely unpretentious. Adam and his friend Ollie are DJing, and yeah, so it's basically like music.
These are people that work at the restaurant, by the way.
Yeah, it's really fun. It's like all of us that work together, so we've got someone doing food, grilling it, so the idea is you just get in there with your hands. It's like no cutlery,
finger. Especially one of the things I love about the events at Micklewigger in the courtyard, because the courtyard's so lovely and it's so not pretentious when you're out there. Like,
yeah, it's like a little
barbecues
oasis
and stuff. Yeah, it's so nice.
I have to say, like, I totally thought Frozo was going to be disgusting, because I was like, why is someone doing
that? I know,
it
just sounds also like really American. Just this idea to like take something that's lovely and then make it insane.
But Gwen, you drink a Wurstramina, mate.
Hey.
We can drink kitsch drinks together.
Okay. It's so sad that Gewürztraminer has like entered this like kitsch like section, because the Hummel one is so young.
Hashtag Gwen and her grandma Gewürztraminer.
I think it's going to be like Gwen Wurstraminer. Hashtag Gwen Wurstraminer. So, I'm happy that we kept the other glass of this one too, because I do love that.
Yeah, gosh, you've been racing along. I had a few bottles last night. Yesterday was the only other day that I had something to drink, and I had the Kopitsch Grüne Veltliner from Austria, which we filtered. Yum.
So is this the next one already?
Yeah, I just poured it.
Oh my god,
for you.
It smells amazing.
Yeah.
This one's super light coloured. Syrupy.
I don't know if it's that light though, because I remember tasting this. I have to put
colour. The colour is quite light. I'm just saying the colour is quite light, but the viscosity is like...
But it's quite... I find
it's
this...
very thick.
Yeah, it's very orange as well though.
Yeah, it's
really super orange, like onion skin sort of colour.
Yeah, totally.
And
but it's got some, like, what's the percentage of this?
Yeah, so Clos Sibon, and Cuvée Tradition Rosé, and I believe that it is 2015. Yeah, so it's a Côte de Provence Cru Classé Rosé.
Oh, it smells really yum.
And actually, it was quite new for me. Like, I was actually amazed that I discovered this wine in Miami with Laura, as I mentioned, with
Love
Southern
Artisan.
Love
that you have to go so far away to discover something, like, not
Yeah,
that
but
far
you know,
there.
Like, because now I work in three different markets at the moment,
right.
The UK, Germany, and now Florida, soon to be Toronto as well. It's interesting because certain wines are bigger in other markets.
Yeah, totally.
Like, I've discovered stuff that you like, there's stuff that's so...
Yeah.
For example, like, Roch d'Anglade is, like, very popular in Berlin, but those wines are almost unheard of. You don't see them on, like, restaurant lists
But this
in
is the
London.
Thing that I'm always, like, fascinated by different markets. So being in Copenhagen recently, because it's not a wine region, they're so much more open to the idea of wines from different regions. So, like, I was in Helsingør, a tiny town, and they have so many Washington State and Californian Pinots on their wine list.
I think also that people are willing to spend more on wine there as well.
Of course.
But there's also more... It's a more affluent country as well.
Sure, but when you don't have your own wine region, because this is what happens in Europe, everyone is like, they just stick to what they... You know, the French love to drink French wine, the Germans drink their own wine, Austrians... I mean, you can't get an Austrian to your dinner party without a Grüner Veltliner. You know, you need... wines from where they're from, but because they don't have their own wines, they just have this super open mind about wines from all over the world. So I was really impressed with wine lists, even at small places in Denmark, that were just a bit more varied, more interesting regions on there.
Yeah.
So it's nice to see that different regions have a different pull to different things.
I mean, you see it with food anyway, and it depends on the importers,
their distributors, like
how they're selling it. Yeah, so I'd never seen these wines in London. Like, let's say I know the path well in London. Like, I've been to so many tastings, and I know many of the importers. So I don't actually know this is even in the UK or not. But I discovered this when I was in Miami. It's on the list at Chotto in Miami too, because I kind of fell in love with the wine straight away. Gosh, these wines, like, they have so much personality and soul and story. Okay, it's not super old winery, but I think they've been making wine since the 30s. The labels themselves, absolutely beautiful. Like,
they're so French, old French.
Yeah, it almost, for me, when I first saw the label, I thought it almost looked like a beer.
Yeah, it has that, like, tavern, like, inn kind of look about it.
Yeah, a historical label that probably hasn't changed for a long time.
I did write some stuff down.
We were talking a little bit about it. You asked me before. Sorry, I've went on a bit of a long...
It's all right. Tangents are good. We like tangents. Yeah.
So this...
it dates back to 1797.
Oh, okay. But the labels, here I said it with its fabulous, like, I just referenced my good friend Jamie Good and his blog earlier, and I looked at it and he said that the labels date back to the 1930s, so it probably goes back longer than that. So you asked about grape varieties. So this particular one, the Cuvée Tradition, is a blend of Tiburon and Grenache. So 90% and 10% Grenache. They have to add the Grenache in, apparently, for the appellation, for it to be allowed to be called Côte de Provence. And we talked about that earlier, actually, yes, about the fact that the owner had to put the grape on the label as well.
Because it's quite unusual to be able to do that, so he worked with the AOC to be able to put the grape on the label, which I think is cool.
Yeah, it is cool. So, and I had never heard of this grape variety before.
Me neither until last night when you told me you were bringing it.
So I totally thought, this is really interesting. So a little bit of information about it, originating from Greece. It was imported to Italy by the ancient Greeks, and it's named after the Tiber River. And eventually it made its way to France because Caesar brought it with him and established it. Like, then it was established in Provence, so it actually came over with
Napoleon.
With Caesar, which is like, that's... For me, that's quite interesting. And then it said, obviously, phylloxera then hit Europe. And what we saw was so many vines being pulled up and other things were replanted. And this was one of the grape varieties that was quite difficult because it has quite uneven yields, uneven ripeness. It's quite susceptible to disease as well. So it requires a lot more work in the vineyard than other varieties. So obviously at the point where phylloxera hit and had to replant different grape varieties, are you always going to choose the difficult job?
No, but that's what I really love about this idea that, like, the person, like, these guys really fell in love with this grape.
Yeah.
And I think this has definitely been a labor of love.
So the owner of the winery today, Claude, his great-grandfather grafted it and then replanted it. In there, they've got a 16-hectare vineyard very close to the sea. And because they're quite close to the sea, it reduces the pressure for disease and things like that because you've got this fresh air just sort of drying things out.
More people should take care of these, like, native sort of indigenous grapes to areas.
Yeah,
and you know, it's quite sad if they get, you know, we don't need more Merlots in the world, or we don't need more, you know, it's nice to have things that are from a place.
Sideways.
No, I've never seen that film.
Oh, my God, you need to see that. I've got the book as well, actually.
No, I've never seen
it. Oh, my God, I think I might have the DVD. I have to give it to you. I'm going to look downstairs for it after.
But, do you think I have a DVD player? One of these stupid Macs that doesn't have even, like, a hole for the DVD player.
Okay, so what you need to do is you need to go online. You need to buy one of those external drives.
Yeah, I know.
I'm sure you can stream it.
I could probably stream it on Amazon Prime.
No, so it's like a comedy.
I've heard of it.
About wine, and it's set in... West Coast of the US and Napa Valley, basically, and this guy's like going through a bit of a rough time, and the whole time he's like, I'm not drinking any fucking Merlot, and it's like,
it's really why it's about, I picked Merlot. It just seemed like the thing that I don't want to drink more of.
I know, poor Merlot, it's had a hard time lately.
I know, maybe it's like it's due for a reinvention.
Anyway,
let's have a sniff.
That's why I meant that. I lost my now I've gone off on time. It's okay. Yeah, interesting nose, actually, because immediately you've got these lovely sort of fruit notes,
Yeah, because at first, the very first sniff I got, I thought strawberry right away, but you're right, with the tangerine, there is that little sort of...
Tangerine.
It smells so good. It's really like perfume.
Red currant. It's really interesting. You're right, though. It does smell like strawberries.
But cherries. Like wild strawberries, like yeah. little delicious wild strawberries.
But I like that big... it's like not just fruit. Like no, it's also like it's like quite savory. Like yeah. it smelled almost a bit tarry at first.
Yeah.
You know, like it has smell Nebbiolo. Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like an earthiness to it.
I love the smell. I would wear this like a perfume.
Yeah, it's not... I would wear this.
Totally, I would.
I would bathe in this wine.
Yeah, it smells good.
And this is something I really remember from when I tasted it. The texture of the wine is incredible. Mm. When you try rosés like this, it really makes you rethink like the tick box rosé right. category, I think.
It's definitely... it's definitely got some alcohol on it.
Do you think so?
It's 13.5, I checked.
Yeah, which is not very much. But maybe there's been some malolactic there because it's got this creamy, lactic note totally. To it, which I think is what's giving it more texture.
I think when I breathed out, there's that little, like, the little hot note.
Really? I don't find it hot at all. Yeah, I find it dry, complex, like, fine. This sort of silky, but, like, at the same time, like, a dense structure to it. But it's light at the end. And it's nice because you have that balance. You have that balance of the fruit, but the fruit's subtle, and then you've got this slightly earthy, sappy sort of finish.
I love when you have a wine that smells more strongly of fruit than it tastes. I kind of like the mind melding of the smell and the taste together not being...
Yeah.
Sometimes I like to smell fruit more than
I like to
taste.
So you find it interesting like when the nose doesn't match the...
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I feel like it's when you eat a dish where you smell something and you don't taste it, I think it messes with your brain a little bit, but it's nice.
That wine, I would be very happy to sit at any table that wine served. Obviously, I'm biased. I've kept that little Coravin bottle in the fridge for ages because I've been waiting for the right time to crack it. And then when you said, let's talk about rosé, I was like, oh, I can get it out.
Well, that's really nice.
I was sort of saving it.
Oh, yeah. It just lasts forever in your mouth. It's... That finishes long, long, long.
Mm. Oh, so good. Such good wine.
But you're right. But I also think if you gave this to somebody blind, they probably, I don't know what they would immediately think rosé, do you think? But I don't think I would.
You say that, but I think if I was given this blind in a black glass, or I was blindfolded, let's say, I reckon I would think it was a white wine.
Yeah, I don't think I would immediately think rosé. I know it smells really, I really love the smell the most.
Contemplative wine. Mm.
What would you serve this with?
With itself. Yeah. I think this would be good with food. Do you know what I think this would be really good with, actually?
Kind of like grilled lamb or something.
Yeah, or not even that, like Japanese food. There's like an umaminess to it. So even like enoki mushroom, like a mushroom broth or something, it could be quite interesting with.
Oh yeah, super. Yes, I totally see that.
With something that's like imagine like enoki mushroom, slightly smoked, like something.
Yeah, totally.
Even like Scandinavian food.
Yep.
Could be interesting.
Because it can handle something from the sea, you know? It definitely has enough to deal with seaweed or any of those kind of flavors.
Do you know what? There was a dish because I used to work at Attica in Melbourne, and there was a dish that Ben used to make, and it was pearl oyster meat that was just really, like, it was so tender, like, just cooked. It was served in, like, a shiitake broth with, some red radish. And it was lovely because you have this lovely, delicate... meat, which is almost like pearl oyster meat. It's almost like a bit more like a scallop than an oyster. So you have that and then like this, like very sort of viscous, like thickened mushroom stock with it.
And then the brightness of the radish.
Radish just sort of gave it a bit of a bite. So and something like that would be amazing with this wine.
Yeah, you're right with it.
Because it's quite harmonious, this wine. It's not, I think, you know, with some rosés, unfortunately, I thought the Quête Cranquoche was going to have
I thought it was going to be much more interesting. Yeah.
For like some of those richer, like more tannic, darker colored rosado, Spanish rosado styles are really great with like barbecued foods. Something like this, it's like quite sophisticated and it's got this
harmony.
My mind goes to like Nordic cuisine or Japanese food.
I did say when I was thinking like grilled lamb, I did imagine tiny little bits of like boop, boop, boop.
Yeah.
Like something tiny.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Delicate, refined. Yeah, super yum. Hmm. So what's the price of something like this retail? I mean, I don't think this is the kind of wine you can buy at a shop.
You probably can from the right shop. It's not something that would be easy to get hold of. Oh, I actually don't know the price of it in Europe, but I know the price in...
What's the American price? Because I think it's interesting to also show you get what you pay for a little bit too. I mean, there's different...
On the list in Miami, it's like $60 in the restaurant.
So you'd so probably buy it for like $35 or something?
No.
At a shop? I don't know.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah,
a shop, not like...
Oh, yeah, so a shop. I imagine it would be a similar price to like Tompier Rosé or a little bit cheaper. Right.
So like at home, like a 25 to 30 euro mark?
Yeah, like £20 a bottle or €25. I imagine. I'd have to double check that.
But that seems like a really good value for €25 would be... I would pay €25 for that wine. I'd probably pay a bit more, to be honest. But I do like the idea that we have different price points here that you can kind of see that there's lots of different things that you can be drinking for different prices.
Yeah, somewhere around sort of, late teens to 20. It says online on a wine shop online.
I always feel like those wine shops online are lying.
Yeah.
I always feel like they're like giving you like too much of a...
Yeah, I think, you know, we've tried four different styles, because they're a little bit, or three different styles. So we tried...
I think they're pretty different. Yeah.
Yeah, like we've tried the Pet Nat, which is the Lambrusco, which is a style of wine I totally recommend for people to just...
Love it.
Get stuck into, enjoy... Don't make it complicated. Don't think about it. Just be free and embrace the wine for what it is. And don't make it complicated, because it's not complicated wine. And then we've got like two Provençal rosés that are very different in style, which is also quite interesting. Well, they're similar, but different at the same time. So
you can see one is like easy drinking and straightforward, and the other one is a bit more complex. You know, I feel bad that this one wasn't a hit.
You feel bad that the Hummel...
Yeah, because I actually love the idea that we move away a little bit from France and those areas to look at Eastern Europe. I kind of wish we had a North American rosé, actually, because it would have been nice to have a little look at that bad boy.
I can nip round to the Spaty and get a bottle of Blossom Hill Zinfandel Blush.
No!
It'll probably be as good.
No, stop it. Might be nice. Don't say that. Could be. Let's not. But I think it's also nice to say that there are lots of other regions other than France that make.
Yeah, I'm totally on board with that. It's so cool to get people introduced to a different region, different producer. Like, especially, you're right, like Hungarian wine, Polish wine. I've been trying a lot of wine from Bulgaria lately.
Cool.
And I think definitely these wines, they need.
People
support.
Need to, exactly. Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's interesting. There's some good stuff. I think, both you and I are fans of Hummel, but I think that wine in particular is just not ticking the box.
I do also think that, people just need to not be afraid of wines from places they don't always see on wine lists. So, you know, if you live in a small place and your local favorite restaurant just has French wines or just has Italian wines, sometimes there's a snobbery around this certain regions, and it's nice to just try whatever, you know, like you'll know what you like. Don't let other people dictate what you should be drinking.
Yes, you know, like even look, we tried two like Provençal rosés today,
and come on, they know what they're varieties,
and they're different, but you know, there is a line and there's a style that
certainly,
so you know, for people, I understand why people say, oh, I want a Provençal
totally.
Rosé, because they know what they're going to get because they're buying the brand.
Right, absolutely.
Which is like, okay, I'm having a dry, pale, skinned rosé. Like, it's going to be more delicate and it's fresh and, you know, that's
easy drinking.
What people are buying into. And I think, you know, we all sometimes like what is familiar.
Sure.
And safe.
Totally. And we're all guilty of that.
And today, you know...
They showed themselves.
Yeah,
I know.
Out of the box.
But I do think that it is. Yeah. I mean, this one wasn't an expensive step out of the box. But I do think there are some surprises sometimes, and I think they're worth a try.
I agree.
I think sometimes you have to take a leap of faith. It didn't work for us today, but it's not to say it couldn't have been great.
Keep drinking pink.
Yes, drink all the pink. Think pink. Drink
bon
pink.
Bon courage. Drink pink.
All right. Cheers. I mean, I've got barely anything left in my glass, but...